The following broadcast of Sioux Valley Voice was recorded earlier today. The next live show will be Wednesday, June 4th at 10 a.m. Good morning. You're listening to KTNA 88.9 FM Talkeetna, community radio for the Upper Susitna Valley. This is Sioux Valley Voice, KTNA's regular public affairs program. I'm your host, Philip Manning. Today, my guest is Wes Keller, State House Representative, who represents the Upper Valley in Juneau. We'll be discussing the session that ended last month, as well as Representative Keller's view of the future of the Valley and the state. We'll be taking your calls throughout the show at 733-1200, or you can send an email to dj@ktna.org. Good morning, Representative Keller.
Good morning, Philip. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I think this is your first time with me here in the studio, but I don't think it's your first time at the station, is it?
No, I think I was here one more time. One other time. It's beautiful Talkeetna. Nice studio. Really amazing.
Yeah, so... And a beautiful day to boot. It's about 55 degrees already. So,
yeah.
Well, we do have a number of topics ahead of us here. Like I said, I think we'll go down some of the high points from the last legislative session, which ended April 24th, 5th, somewhere in there.
25th or 6th, I think.
Okay.
One of the two, yeah, 26th.
And it ran a few days long, as I recall. Yeah. There were a lot of big ticket items, but I guess before we get into specific issues, how would you rate the session overall as far as what was accomplished?
Oh, I'd give it a pretty high rating from my experience. The reason is because we have a very good Valley delegation down there working together well, and we got some things done. There's a lot. Of course, it's never 100%. Yeah, that was super. You know, there's some things I wish we could have done different. But, yeah, there's some highlights. I think the whole session, not this year, but that SB 21, redoing that, the gas tax, was really an important move that we got done, I think.
Okay. And so you said there are a few things you wish could have been done differently. Is there one thing that didn't get through this session that you really wish would have?
Well, it depends on how you're... I was thinking more in the terms of the overall budget of the state. You know, we have 90% of our revenue, the spending money we have, comes out of the pipe. And that's a precarious position, you know, for us to be in because of all the... obligations we have, both in desires we have to meet the education needs and the health and social services needs and whatever. But there's several bills that I wish would have gone through that didn't.
Sure,
but we, you know, it'd make a longer list. But mostly, we have to get our spending in line in the state. I mean, if we take the current revenue projections, we're in for a pretty flat time at best. You know, next 10 years.
Sure.
We're working hard as we can, doing what we can to increase the revenue. But if we could look at the projections, the revenue projections, it's not real good. So.
Yeah, indeed. And one of the things, and I guess the first issue on my list here is would potentially help ease that, or I guess that's at least the plan, which is the LNG pipeline down to Nikiski. So that took up a lot of conversation during the session. There was a lot of hammering out of agreements and, you know, who was going to own what piece and how much was the state's stake, how much was their risk, how much was the potential gain. There's weeks and weeks of committee meetings on that.
Very important stuff. And Philip, I'm really glad that you, you know, it delights me that everybody's paying attention. That actually what we did is we increased the probability that we're going to get a large diameter pipe coming down here. And yeah, you're right. There was a lot of details and get the LNG plant wherever it is. We've got to decide where it's going to be. We're in a process here. But that, like you say, that's a very, very significant as far as the revenue projections for the state. So,
and then so part of that, and I know it's still very early on, but you know, I've had some folks here as well as my own personal curiosity wondering where exactly this is going to be, because obviously you've got Prudhoe Bay, and then it's got to get to Nikiski, which makes it pretty likely it's going to pass somewhere near this area at some point.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. You know, I'm very eager, but remember, I'm 1 of 60 and I haven't seen the plans at that level.
Sure.
However, I guess if I was going to guess, I would guess that we're going to see more at Port McKenzie, you know, than maybe even at Nikiski. I don't know, but I mean, there's a lot of potential there anyway. Mm. And as far as where it's going to go through, I don't know. And of course, the affordable energy that would be available to the whole rail belt when that goes through is a very exciting thing to anticipate.
Sure, I guess that's another whole other aspect of the project. There's talk that in addition to being able to export liquefied natural gas to the East Asian market and other markets, that it would also help out in Fairbanks, where there's a lot of really high energy cost, especially heating cost. And I know this is one of the things that had a lot of bipartisan support, at least the project itself. Some of the particulars there was some argument over, but it sounds like everybody in Juneau was pretty much behind this project, at least conceptually.
Absolutely, conceptually, yeah. And my guess is, and I, by the way, I want to say right here, it's really an honor for me to represent Talkeetna in this area. It's one of my favorite parts of the state, and I've been up here a long time. But my sense is that the people of Talkeetna in this area, would much prefer the affordable gas energy and, to the Watana project in particular.
But, I think that's a safe assumption.
Yeah, but I mean, I think everybody I've talked to, nobody has said, that they don't want the affordable energy, so
sure.
I think that's pretty, consensus is pretty broad on that, yeah.
Yeah, and so is there any sort of projection on when we might actually see LNG flowing through this pipeline? I mean, in the best case scenario, it's going to be a number of years, right?
Oh, absolutely. But it's the timeline is online. You can go on, if you look up AGDC or big Alaska pipe, whatever, you'll see it. The projection that the next step, I guess, that I watch for is 2015, the open season going to happen. And that's very significant, because that is where the producers step up to the plate and say, we're going to have stuff to send down that pipe, and we're going to commit to paying the tariff on getting it down the pipe, which of course pays for it. So yeah, that's 2015 is what I'm anticipating.
Okay. And so the partners on that, obviously you've got the big three,
yeah.
BP, ConocoPhillips, and Exxon.
Yes.
And then the fourth wing of that, it's TransCanada and the state of Alaska kind of sharing that fourth portion. Is that about right?
Yeah, I'm not real clear on exactly what the proportions are going to be there, but I want to say right up front, TransCanada has taken a lot of criticism hits over time. Impression is that it's a very reputable company. It's the biggest pipeline company in the world. They've always been straight up front in talking with me. I'm not sure what the division's going to be there, but I'm pretty comfortable with us working with him.
Okay. So obviously, I mean, we could easily have an entire show just on the gas line.
Absolutely.
We could probably have an entire series of shows just on the gas line. But I mean, the upshot seems to be everybody or almost everybody in Juneau thinks that this is a way to supplement the oil income as well as getting more energy to the rail belt in particular. Pretty much.
I think.
Okay.
That's my take. When you're 1 of 60, you have you're very much hesitant to speak for the other 59.
Sure.
but I
for your part though.
Yeah, for my part, that's what I see.
Okay. well, while we're on mega projects here, we've got the one a little bit closer to home. A couple of them a little bit closer to home. The first being Susitna-Watana, which you alluded to a little bit ago. You know, folks here, the community council took an advisory vote on this a few years back or a couple of years back, and I think the vote was 109-19 against building and funding the Susitna-Watana project. When I spoke with you a couple of weeks ago, you made a statement that I found interesting and honestly a little unexpected, which was that you said now is not the right time to be building the Susitna-Watana Dam. Is that what informs that opinion for you?
It's interesting that you're 109-19. I haven't talked to the 19. That's why.
Well, yeah, they're around.
They're here. Okay. I think what I meant to say was that it's unlikely that I think that the dam is going to go forward, on a schedule that we're anticipating now, particularly because of and in the context of the big gas pipe coming down. That's why I say that. I mean, it's a, you look at the energy production that we need, and I think if we had both gas pipeline and the dam, we probably would be an overkill at this point. Now, that isn't to say that down the roadways, depending on our population and if we can get some value-added stuff going on up here in industry, that the it's going to be very important at that point.
Okay, so it's the context of getting ready to start another even larger mega project that really kind of makes you think, put this on the shelf for a little bit?
Well, put it on the shelf, yeah. I voted for the, I did not try to stop, is I guess more accurate, the funding that went into the continuation mm-hmm. of Wautauna. But frankly, my interest is the studies that are happening. For one thing, the salmon are so critically important, and there's a lot of money being spent there in trying to understand what happened, and what we can do to improve. And I just don't see the $10 million coming this way to enhance those studies. And a lot of that money goes to Talkeetna folks, so I'm supportive of them not just pulling, stopping the whole project,
okay.
And I've just by nature, I'm very much for affordable energy, and I'm very much for renewable and water. Down in Juneau, by the way, I can't give you the numbers, but the electric bill, I can give you the numbers for my apartment. we have a 2-bedroom apartment, and they have water, mm-hmm. they have hydro. And we pay about, I think it's 40 or 50 a month on electricity. And in comparison, any of us, our comparison, what we're spending up here, it's very affordable down there. So
okay. So my guest today is Representative Wes Keller. If you want to join in on the conversation, you can do that a couple of ways. You can give us a call, 733-1200. You can send us an email at dj@ktna.org. Or you can head to our Facebook page. I've got a post up there that you can comment on if you want to leave us a question that way. So talking a little bit more about Susitna-Wautauna, as we look at it in the context of the gas pipeline, I think one of the other comments, and I wish I'd printed the transcript from that piece that I did a couple of weeks ago and brought it down with me, but one of the comments that I guess it was Senator Dyson that said that, electricity isn't necessarily an efficient way to heat. And that's the biggest concern, especially when you get up into Fairbanks, things like that. And so right now, what would you have to see in order to say either definitively yay or definitively nay on eventually building the dam?
Well, for me, it's all about, I'm thinking more in the context of constituents' light bill, and you don't have to include heat to get huge light bills. My goodness, mine is, approach somewhere around $200. I don't even know. I haven't looked at it for a while, but we don't have electric heat. My word, that's just running the refrigerator and a few lights and a compressor and shop and that kind of stuff, So I guess the... to me, the issue is at what point does the spending and the work and the effort of a mega project like this produce the benefits for the largest number of Alaskans? And I just don't think the numbers work at this moment, but in sometime in the future, that would sure tip the scale for me.
Okay. And then as far as, statewide, obviously there are a lot of implications. You do have a lot of folks in Fairbanks and in other places in the rail belt who are very gung-ho about the Susitna-Wautauna project. Here in your district, though, it seems to be a growing sentiment that people don't want it and didn't want any funding to go for it. Now, as you explained, and when I talked to you a couple of weeks ago, what you told me then was that one of the reasons you supported the $20 million of funding was not to pull the plug on river research and fish research and things like that are going on. But if the rubber hits the road on this, and it comes down to, are we going to build this or are we not? And your district says no, but the state in general is saying yes. I mean, what kind of position does that put you in?
Philip, that's a great question. For any legislator, it's a great question because, you know, you have to go down there with a philosophy of what it means to represent. Mm. Like I said, I'm proud to represent this area. I really am. But at some point, you know, what happens, ideally, is you elect somebody to go down there that is going to represent you, you know, on the issue. So mm-hmm. that means that if the numbers 109 to 19 held, you know, that would have a lot of weight. That would carry a lot of weight as far as, you know, what I would do and what I would say. Personally, my beliefs and whatever, you know, I would tend to go for the affordable energy and the hydro energy and all that. But I weigh what the what my constituents want. And I cannot give you the specific trigger that it would take for me to go and start actively fighting every penny that goes toward the dam. I'm just not there at this sure. point. You know, so
that's understandable. I understand yeah. that's a tough question. Yeah. Looks like we do have a caller on the line, and it is G. Denny who has a question about. We've got G. Denny who has a question about the Alaska Railroad. So go ahead, G. You're on the air.
Thank you very much, Mr. Keller, Representative Keller. You are talking about representation of the people. I want to couch this question in terms of our position with the railroad. My understanding of fascism is when you have corporation and state so close that they're indistinguishable. And, you know, whether it's the oil companies or industrial tourism, offshore-based, whatever it is. And when we talk about the railroad being a state corporation, and I'd like you to address that. If it belongs to the people, but they have no say in how it's operated, where does that put us? And I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, G. So is the railroad fascist?
By his definition, we'll take his definition, you know. By his definition, we have several fascist entities in the state of Alaska, among them, you know, AGDC, as we have proposed it. The problem we have in Alaska is we have 750,000 people here. And so our task as legislators is to take the natural resources and use them for the maximum benefit of the people. So what we do, you know, you have to, if there's not enough people to carry the free market, you know, on something like a railroad, then you got the government getting involved subsidizing. It's always a problem. It's certainly better if they have the private entity in partnership, I think, with the government, because the government is incapable mm-hmm. of doing things efficiently. It isn't built to be efficient. It's built to be, a vetting where we all get together and vet our issues and come out with something that we hope is the right thing to do. So, I too share your frustration. With the railroad, you know, there's a lot of things I wish we could do with it that we can't. I wish that there was enough business for the railroad so that the state doesn't have to be involved at all.
Sure.
But frankly, I want to keep the railroad. I think it's a really nice asset that I think we need to have. And so until we can afford to get out of it, we just have to be involved.
Sure. And I think what he may be referring to, and I'm sure I'll be corrected if I'm wrong on this, okay. but because it came up at a recent community council meeting, and it's come up in years past as well, is that the railroad, obviously, they've got to control the vegetation near the sidings and near the tracks, and what they've done, or what they've been doing, is spraying herbicide. It's basically an industrial equivalent of Roundup that you'd use in your yard. And there's a lot of folks around here who are pretty concerned about that and the potential health risks of that. They're saying there's more data coming out saying, you know what, it's really not very good to be around this stuff, to be consuming it, to have it in your water potentially. And last year, there was an ongoing series of discussions back and forth with the Alaska Railroad on what to do. Their argument was, you know, well, we have to do this because it's the most efficient way to clear the brush. There were eventually were some concessions. They didn't spray near certain mile markers up into Chase in particular, as well as some places down here where folks lived. This year, it's not quite as clear whether or not they're going to be willing to abide by those kind of self-imposed restrictions again. And so there are some folks concerned about that once more. And I think that may have been the impetus of Mr. Denny's comments there.
I appreciate it. And I was, peripherally aware of the issue. I've talked to the railroad on this, and I will re-educate myself. I'll talk to them and see what their intents are.
So, and I guess kind of to head back around, we talked quite a bit about the dam. We can move on to something else, though. Don't be surprised if someone else calls in and wants to talk about it.
Yeah.
But another big project. I don't know what the line for mega project is, if it has to be a $1 billion project or not. But this one's at the very least close enough, and that is the Kinnickarm crossing. You, as well as the other representatives from the Valley, have been staunch supporters of the Kinnickarm crossing. The Borough Assembly is almost unanimous, I think, maybe completely unanimous, but at the very least, a supermajority of the Borough Assembly is strongly in favor of the Kinnickarm crossing, and there's kind of a new plan going forward for this year. Can you highlight a little bit about that and the involvement of the Department of Transportation in this year?
Yeah, I think what we did, we got to the point where this thing can move forward. Actually, I hesitate to say too much because here shortly there's going to be a new report that comes out within the next 5-10 days. I'll make sure, Philip, you get a copy of it.
Sure.
DOT's involvement puts it closer, to the government to be involved with the infrastructure as it should be, and I think it was the right thing to do. I am indeed a staunch supporter of the Kinnickarm Bridge. When I first came to Alaska back in 1964, that was the issue. You know, I mean, in fact, I remember, I think it was then Senator Gravel, that was one of his campaign planks, he was going to get the bridge built. And it just seems going on every year the costs go up, and this is a viable way to go. We got a great plan, I think. And I think from the perspective of those of us in that love Talkeetna and Trapper Creek and along the west side of the mountains there, it's a good choice, too, because if we do get some growth in the population in the state of Alaska, I think Port McKenzie is a great place to have that focused, and it's frankly it's ridiculous in Anchorage to have one way out of town. There's the old bridge there by Palmer, but there's many times if there's a hazard on that highway where it's pretty it's a safety issue for a lot of people.
Okay. You're listening to Sioux Valley Voice. My guest today is Representative Wes Keller. If you want to join in on the conversation, you can call us at 733-1200, send us an email at dj@ktna.org, or head to our Facebook page and make a comment on the post there for today's Sioux Valley Voice show. So while we're still on the subject of the Kinnickarm crossing, during session there were some, at times, very passionate statements by Representative Stoltz comes to mind, Representative Newman, and yourself. And you spoke about growth in the state of Alaska. Now, right now, a lot of that is coming to the Mat-Su Valley. That's pretty well established at this point. So are you saying then that if the bridge doesn't get built, that some of that might start to slip further north into this area? Is that why you said that Port McKenzie would be a good place for that growth?
That's my perspective.
Yeah. Okay.
And when I look at a map, if I was coming up here and I was going to say, okay, I'm going to live in Alaska, where am I going to go? Well, Anchorage, I wouldn't pick that. And then I would say, wow, shoot, how about some of that nice land, whatever, pick a place, Montana Creek, Willow, whatever, and, see, that's all in our drainages there in the rivers. There's a watershed problem. I want to say, if I could, I want to add to this discussion about the bridge, we don't want to underplay the significance of the rail extension going out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's huge. I think we put, 11 million or something on the continuation on that. But it's a, that's part of it. You see, I mean, that's going to enhance the industry option in that direction. I don't know if you've been out there or not, but there's a mile loop, you know, and a big freight yard, you know, and the port is it's a deep water port. I mean, it has the problems that Anchorage Port has with the silt, and that isn't there with ours. We got a great place for development there, and the rail and the port are very much part of and significantly connected to the Kinnick Arm Bridge. I also want to point out that it's not a conflict of interest. In other words, if I'm going to go to Anchorage, it's going to be shorter for everybody, you know, in the Wasilla area anyway, to go on the old route, you know, not the Kinnick Arm Bridge. But from this area, you know, the access to the population center will be easier with that bridge.
Okay. And kind of on the same subject is widening of the Glen Highway. That was kind of proposed as the alternative at this point if the Kinnick Arm Bridge doesn't go forward. Is the eventual, and I'm talking potentially years and years down the road, I mean, is the eventual widening of the Glen Highway inevitable?
If we didn't do the bridge, I believe it is. But, of course, you know, that's just a projection, and I am very quick to add that it doesn't take long in Juneau when you realize that all projections and prophecies are wrong. You know, you can, but to me it's just common sense. You know, if the population of the valley continues to grow, you know, that traffic is it's horrendous. And, considering the airport is there and it'll take years before it gets built up at that level on this side.
So. Okay. And so you were saying that there's a new report coming out in 5 or 10 days. Is that the updated potential traffic projections? Is that that report, or which one is that coming out?
Actually, I was just told by Representative Newman last night that he's going to have more information for me shortly on
okay.
it, and he'll be explaining it. I'd be setting a trap for myself. I told you more than I know here.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So more, but either way, more information forthcoming in the near future on Kinnick Arm Crossing. Let's move on. The governor at the very beginning of the session during the State of the State called this the education session.
Yeah.
And education was, they made session run long, among other things. But there was a substantial disagreement between the House and the Senate, majorities on both sides, of how to handle an increase in school funding. You know, you had some wanted a larger increase to the base student allocation, which is the number assigned to each student before it's put through a very complicated formula and you arrive at how much money a school actually receives. Some wanted to do it in more lump sum kind of arrangements, and then some wanted to change that very complex formula so that you'd have different amounts based on how rural or urban a school is. In the end, a little bit of all of those kind of happened. So, I mean, what's your final take now that it's done, now that it's passed on and signed on how the education bill turned out?
Philip, I'm gotta tell you, I'm really impressed at how well you understand the issues and how informed you are. That's a very good recap of what happened. I tend to fall on side of the spectrum philosophically, where I prefer the money to not be tied to the BSA. The BSA represents to me a formula, like you said, that's very complex, and what happens is it creates a system, all the rules related to each element of the formula, which I could go into and explain, but everybody's eyes glaze over if I do that. but we can't address the things that need to be addressed in education, and those things are we need to increase the proficiency of our students, and they increase the freedom of our schools and to do the programs that work best for their kids and, you know, to get that proficiency there and to increase
sure.
the choice of parents. I believe that is ultimately the question here, is whether or not there's competition in the system. The options of education are expanding hugely. You know, the digital delivery options that we have. You can't quite become a brain surgeon yet by taking online courses, but there's a lot there. And it's,
sure.
it's good, high quality and fun stuff. And by the way, our district knows that. In our district, we have the best school district. We really do in the state of Alaska. They're the only ones that come down there and embrace the concept of competition, choice, and expansion. We have a central school there with the really good distance delivery stuff. And so that's basically how we got there in our district, is we gave block money, for example, to connect as many schools as we could with fiber optics. You know, if that money had been put in the base student allocation process, that, you know, that would have never happened. And the I tended toward that end of the spectrum. I just want to say that there's something very deceptive in not by anybody's intent here, but the term base student allocation. What is it? A number? What I forget what it is. $5,000-$6,000, something like that. It sounds real. You think, that's pretty reasonable. But that's exactly. It's way less than half of what we spend per student in the state of Alaska. Because of the formula, what happens, you take this base student allocation, and then you multiply it times factors, and the factors increase. So the bottom line is we spend nearly $20,000 a student in the state of Alaska for our education. And it doesn't take a genius to figure out that you take a classroom of 20 kids, and then you say, hey, that's $400,000. There's something wrong with his picture. You know, we're spending too much. So the answer is to not be afraid of new ideas and to, explore them.
Okay. Well, and as you mentioned, the Matsu Valley or Matsu Borough School District does have a lot of interesting programs. They've got a lot of vocational technical programs, high school apprenticeship type things that are looked at statewide, and the borough does definitely receive praise for those. Another issue of school choice that never actually came to a vote this go round is the constitutional amendment that was carried by Senator Dunleavy, which was to allow private funding, or public funding rather, to go to private schools. It got caught up, never quite made it to the floor. It in and of itself wouldn't have allowed vouchers for private schools, but a lot of people saw that as the first step down that road. If that comes up again, and you're, if that comes up again, and you're still in the House next year, how do you look at that?
Again, I'm impressed with your I really am impressed with, and with your fairness and your understanding of the issue. So many people say, "What do you think about the voucher bill?" You know, that's a total misrepresentation of what it is. It's but I got to tell you. Senator Dunleavy, his bill is SGR 9, but mine was HGR 1.
Okay,
and so I got 4 years in this. So I got a bias that's way over the edge here, and it's going to be one of my first bills next year. I think that the people of Alaska deserve to be able to make that choice, and what the choice they're making is not whether or not they're going to spend money in the private schools at all. It's what it is it eliminates the Blaine Amendment. From the Constitution, which has been misinterpreted, in my opinion. I'm not an attorney and I'm not a judge, but it's been misinterpreted by our Supreme Court system. And in effect, what we've got right now is we have a lot of money that goes out to pay for education services, not necessarily religious, but lots of private. You know, that's already there. Every one of those programs is in danger of a lawsuit based on the interpretation that is been done by the Supreme Court.
And is that through tax credits and that sort of thing?
What happened, Sheldon Jackson? Oh, you mean the programs that exist? Well,
yeah.
You take the one that jumps to mind is the Excellence Scholarship. I forget the name of it. Where the students, if they do really well, they get a part of their education paid for as they go to college, and there's no restriction on that. In fact, it very explicitly says that the scholarships can go for private and or religious schools as long as the students have a choice. I mean, that's the whole point. You don't want to get into establishment of religion. Obviously, that isn't the point of all this at all. But if the parents have a choice where to send the kids, then the Supreme Court prevention of us paying for that. See, the state, the interest of the state is that our kids get the very best education that's possible and available out there. It doesn't take much research to figure out that private schools do pretty good, you know, and so having that element in our toolbox for educating our children is a very positive thing. So, yeah, okay. I'll be quick to continue that effort as we go.
Yeah, and I'm sorry it had slipped my mind that you were the one carrying the House version of that. So, yeah. Well, we're just past the halfway point here, so we're going to take a quick break. If you want to join in on the second half of the show, you can give us a call at 733-1200, email dj@ktna.org, or leave us a comment on our Facebook page. My guest is Representative Wes Keller, and I will be back in just a couple of minutes with more Sioux Valley Voice. And we're back for the slightly less than second half of Sioux Valley Voice. My name's Philip Manning. My guest today is Representative Wes Keller, who is the representative for the Upper Valley down in Juneau. We've been talking about the session that ended last month. We left off on education, talking about potential amendments to the Constitution, things like that. I want to take a minute and kind of bring it closer to home. I understand you were at the meeting. Were you at the meeting last night at the Borough Assembly?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So last night at the Borough Assembly, the big issue, the issue that filled the room, was the mayoral veto of funding for a preschool program in the Valley. And the kind of the background on that is the superintendent had initially planned to get state funding. That didn't work out this year. And so a little less than half of the program's total funding they were going to the borough for the total amount of like $350,000, as I recall. And it passed unanimously through the assembly, and then about a week later, the borough mayor, Larry DeVilbiss, vetoed it. And he issued, they made public his memo on why he vetoed it, and I want to run this by you and get your reaction to his statement here. Which is, he says, my polling of the department, this is regarding preschool, my polling of the Department of Education and the legislature in Juneau makes me fairly certain that this state funding will not be forthcoming. For one thing, there are no standards for pre-kindergarten. It is regarded as glorified daycare. Any reaction to that?
Well, I'm not going to make a reckless statement. Worse, I'll make my own. How's that?
Okay, so, you feel free to make your. What I meant was, were you one of the people he consulted on this?
No, I don't remember talking to Larry about this at all. But I think he's right that the. In fact, I read something here the other day about a governor veto on part of this, but maybe I. I'm not as informed as you are. I thought maybe you're going to... I'm listening carefully there, Philip. Maybe you're going to give me some information I didn't know. Glorified daycare. Well, that's pretty bold statement. I I do have a personal problem with the public school expanding into pre-K, and that's a cautious statement because of the fact that I have seen the data, you know, that the earlier the students get oriented to education, the more successful they are. But I've also seen the data where that the difference didn't make a big difference after a couple of years.
Okay.
And I hesitate to see the government get more and more involved in a system where it isn't going real well to begin with. We spend so much money per student right now, and the results are not good. I mean, we look at the proficiency tests that are given to our kids, you know, it's just not good. So I can see why, you know, people in education, by the way, I'm an educator. I would have a secondary education degree. For a while I was certified in Alaska. I never did actually teach in a public school. So I'm not pretending to be an expert. However, my opinions probably are a little bolder than they should be, because I know little, just enough to be dangerous. But but the point is that it's offensive a little bit to me that public education in general, I'm not talking about the Matsu Borough, has not cleaned up their act and made, given our kids better test results on NAEP, or, you know, one of the only tests we have that compare us with other states.
Right.
And I know all of our parents want that. They want our kids to do really well. And it just seems odd to me that our public education system in general, I'm not talking about the Matsu Borough School District, wants to so desperately get into the pre-K element when there's so much to be done.
Okay. So I guess the Superintendent Paramo, just to kind of lay a little bit more of the groundwork, her statement was that, so there are some Head Start schools, federally funded Head Start preschools down in the Lower Valley, Wasilla, Palmer, I'm missing Meadow Lakes, and they're going to be opening one in Sutton next year that's an extension of the Palmer School. And then there's a lot of private preschools down in the Lower Valley as well. Really where she said that this program is having an effect is in the places where Head Start doesn't exist and there's not a private preschool option. Places like Talkeetna, Trapper Creek, Willow, Big Lake, that sort of area. And that was her reasoning for the school district getting involved. Does that change your perspective on that at all?
Oh, sure. I mean, at some level, I mean, but again, the fundamental question is, you know, just how far do we go down this road where the government is there to take care, to raise our kids, you know, and to educate our kids? I want to, whatever happens, you know, in pre-K, my only real litmus will be whether or not the parent has a choice to be able to spend that money in the best setting possible.
Okay.
For, you know, private or Head Start or whatever, you know, for these pre-K kids.
Okay. So as far as all the way through education, that's kind of your bottom line on that?
That is the bottom line. And by the way, it's one every teacher knows. If the parents are engaged in the kid's life, that kid does better. It's as simple as that. You know, it's the bottom line. You know, as you have families that function where parents care, kids thrive. You know, that's kind of a given.
So we've got a just over 15 minutes left. We're almost three quarters of the way through. We do still have time, though, if you want to join in on the conversation. The number is 733-1200, or you can send us an email, dj@ktna.org, or leave us a comment on our Facebook page. So we've talked quite a bit about education, and it's one of those things that's going to continue to be an issue going forward. I imagine there's going to be, because a lot of the lump funding, or I don't have a better word for that, unfortunately, but the non-recurring, I guess, funding.
Right.
A lot of it sunsets in 3 years, as I recall, and so we may have another big discussion here in three years.
Oh, it's a given. That's part of the problem with from a legislator's perspective, it's the easiest way out as far as the work is concerned is just put it in the BSA and forget it. But you know, because you don't have to look at every program and you don't have to look at the results quite as much because we've given a lot of authority and responsibility to the local school districts. So, yeah, of course, it's going to be a repeat. In fact, there's an element of the legislature, particularly in the House, that really wants to go in and revisit formula,
right,
and go from square one. If we do that, I'll guarantee you it'll be huge. Because I was just on the tail end of the last one, and that's a real big hot issue.
Okay. So there's, again, it's another one of those topics we could have a whole show just on.
That's
education,
right,
in
that's
the state.
Right.
But we do have a few more things that I wanted to cover, and only about 15 minutes to do it in. So let's look quickly at some of the issues that are going to be coming up on ballots. On the primary ballot in August, there's a referendum on Senate Bill 21, which is the oil tax reform that passed last, not this past session, but the session of 2013. Right now, there's a lot of arguing back and forth over whether or not that's going to alleviate the budget shortfalls that the state's seeing right now. You mentioned it earlier, but as far as, I mean, is SB 21, is the new tax regime, is that the future for the state of Alaska in your eyes?
Very good question. And it's a big, big issue, and I'm just going to get rid of all the clouds so you know what I'm thinking, and then I'll try to explain a little bit. Vote no on Prop 1. and the reason is that we do not need to, at this time, it's the wrong time to repeal SB 21. It's only been in place, by the way, for, actually a law for 6 months.
Right. It went into effect at the beginning of the year.
Right. So the declines that are there cannot be assigned, to the SB 21 process. And the problem is what we go back to if we were to repeal SB 21, what we would go back to is ACES.
Mm-hmm.
And ACES, I think, has enough data to show that was not the right way to go. And I think just simply on the production levels, you can get that. It's true that the production hasn't hugely gone up, but decline has leveled off. The decline in the pipe has leveled off, and that's huge. I mean, we were declining at 8% a year. It doesn't take long to get in trouble there, and that has at least leveled off, and I hope that that's because of the anticipation of the tax regime that's put in place because of SB 21.
Okay. And then on the legalization of recreational marijuana.
Wow.
That's on the November ballot.
I have some cognitive dissonance there. I tend to be more libertarian than the average Republican, and I like to think that people ought to be able to make their own choices. However, there's some real big problems there. One is that it's still a federally designated controlled substance. The other is there's more and more information about the dangers of the use, and I think all that has to be weighed, so I haven't made up my mind.
Well, you're not afraid to take on the federal government when it comes to that, though. When there was a stand your ground or was some other gun issue that the governor and the state legislature both said that if the federal government tries to enforce, I think it's a ban on assault, what they were terming assault-style weapons, that anybody trying to enforce that from the ATF would be arrested in the state of Alaska, as I recall.
Yeah, I supported that. But, Philip, you opened the door. I got to tell you that this does take a lot of my time. You know, that particular aspect, federal overreach, really bugs me.
Sure.
And I got to tell you, my favorite bill this year And I say this carefully because it's in the context of the very important stuff we're dealing with, Kibata, the AGDC, education, and the very important infrastructure in the state of Alaska, jobs for Alaskans, all that's there. But we've got an elephant in the room, and that is what is being done to us. And I'm talking about here the federal debt. We're $17.6 trillion in debt, and it's increasing every day. I don't know if you've gone and looked at the world debt clock or not, but what happened is I got a bill through that I really am delighted with. We put together a compact. There's now two states in the compact, Georgia and Alaska, and the included in that is a proposed balanced budget amendment using Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution. I won't get into a lot of deal, but
I do remember saying that.
But the reason I'm pointing it out is, I think you're going to see a whole lot more of this one next year. Keep it on your radar screen because Last I heard, there's 16 to 18 states now
that are
looking to join this, and it's a big deal.
All right.
I mean, it really is. So
we'll keep an eye on it.
Yeah, okay.
A couple more of these quickly, and then we do have another caller. So your thoughts on the initiative to increase minimum wage? I think it would end up 10-10 would be the final number on that.
Okay, I'm going to tell you where I come from naturally on that. I would vote against increase in the minimum wage. That's just if I was operating in a vacuum, not as your representative. It's very clear. There are polls out there that 80% of Alaskans think that ought to be, the minimum wage ought to be increased. On that basis, I will support that. But
okay.
But it's very hesitantly on my part, because if you take with the government, you enforce a minimum wage increase, the people that are hurt are the people. If you spend $2 for a hamburger now, and you're on a fixed income, it's a guarantee that if you pay more for the help to get there, that it's going to be whatever, $2.10, $2.20, so there's going to be an increase. So the people that get hurt, is my point, are the people on fixed income. Even though
through inflation,
all the arguments sound really good, about increasing the minimum wage. In reality, there aren't many people working for minimum wage. I bet you there's very few in Talkeetna.
In the summer, you're probably right. The rest of the year, I think you'd have some people differing with you there. And then finally, the last initiative there is Pebble. Opposition to Pebble, trying to protect the Bristol Bay area from development of a mine down there. Your thoughts on that?
Well, for mining, I'm for responsible mining, and I think we've demonstrated that we can do that. However, Pebbles, I think, is a dead issue. I think that one's been decided for us when Anglo American pulled out. That's a huge, huge statement.
Right.
And
now Rio Tinto as well.
So the vote is anticlimactic on it, but I do think you need to know, because I'm your representative, right? You need to know that if there's other responsible mining, initiatives and potential. And by responsible, I mean we know that there's not going to be any damage to the salmon and that kind of thing. Let's press on,
Okay. Well, we do have a caller on the line. Morgan has a question about daylight savings time. So go ahead, Morgan. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Morgan.
Hi there. What would it take to get Alaska off of daylight savings?
One of my favorite issues. Don't you feel like, isn't it frustrating to me?
It's really frustrating.
We're wagged, the tail wagging the dog, we got to do it.
I know there's other states that have opted out of it, and it seems like it would be a great, totally nonpartisan issue. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Morgan, thank you.
I got to tell you, Morgan, I think I put a bill in a couple years ago on it. Maybe it was when I was working for Senator Dyson. And it's surprising how much opposition there is.
Really?
The opposition comes from people that don't want to have to, they want to stay in sync, rather than part of the year have one thing and part of the year have something else. And the answer to this really is federal. What we ought to do is get Senator Murkowski and Don Young and Begich to work on something where we have a change the time zones, so that we can have our own Alaskan time, and then we can, do what we want. But it's that's a federal thing. All we can do is opt out of the daylight savings time. So all we can do is opt out of the fact that we move our clock, an hour back and forth, and opting out of it doesn't really solve the problem, because you still got to do the math for anybody dealing with outsides.
Okay. And as far as the country goes, we are on our own time zone, right? I mean, we're an hour behind West Coast, and we're a couple hours ahead of Hawaii, I think.
Right. Yeah. But But I mean, exempt us from the federal requirement.
I see. I got you now. So we do have just a few minutes left. I don't see another caller at the moment. So let's take these last few minutes. I want to talk to you a little bit about the future.
Okay.
So you've already said that if you're in office for the next session, one of your first priorities is going to be bringing back the constitutional amendment to allow public funding for private institutions. What else?
Well, actually, that's... That's ongoing, you know, and it isn't something that takes a lot of time because I've got so much time in it already.
Right. You can just bring it back.
The one that's big to me is we really need to do some things on the judicial council, the judicial branch. Right now, our retention votes on judges, you know, I've never talked to an Alaskan yet that knew who they're voting for on the retention of judges.
Okay.
Know? And what it is we, our Constitution is set up in such a way to really isolate the judicial branch.
And I should point out, you are the chair of the Judiciary Committee in the House.
Thank you. I should have done that. Yeah, but I'm not campaigning, right? This is a report.
Well, you know? we'll get to that in a second.
But yeah, no, I am the chair of Judiciary, and I got to add before I forget that I also was vice chair of State Affairs and a lot of the bills. Mm. You know, I heard in both committees, and also vice chair of Hess. But anyway, Judicial Council, we need to look at the laws that regulate and define them, and to just look and make sure we're doing the right thing as far as making sure that Alaskans know what's going on and have some feedback back to the judicial system. Independence is great, but total independence is dangerous, power corrupts, and we just need to have a little bit of accountability there. And so that's probably a key priority.
Okay. And so kind of you touched on it a little bit. This obviously we were more talking about what had been happening, but you are up for election this year. The district number has changed. The district shape hasn't changed much in this area. So it's now District 10. At last check, you had no primary challenges. I do know from looking on the Board of Elections website and talking to one other person, you are going to have two general election challenges. Mm-hmm. Neil Lacey, who's a former member of the Mat-Su Borough School Board, mm-hmm. and Roger Purcell, who is the former mayor of Houston. So in a three-way, and he's going to be running as unaffiliated, I believe mm-hmm. is what he said. He said he's going to be on the ballot as an unaffiliated to and thus bypass the primary. Mm. So with that in mind, what are you looking at as far as in November? What part of your record are you going to be running on?
Well, I certainly I'll run on all of it. I'm not ashamed of any of it, and I work awfully hard. Like you just pointed out, to get to a committee assignment, you know, that takes a little bit of seniority, a little bit of respect and appreciation by your peers. And I ended up with the chair of judiciary. I think that's very significant. Also vice chair of Hess, vice chair of State Affairs, and also served
Hess being Health and Social Services.
Health and Social Services, real big deal. I used to spend a lot of time there. And then I also served on Rules Committee mm-hmm. and interact with leadership at that level there. It takes time to get to that point. So I'll be running on my history, my votes, my interests, and there's a lot of work. I mean, I serve on the Alaska Health Commission as one of the commissioners there. We've been tasked with trying to figure out how to keep the healthcare system from crashing because of the huge increases that are happening all along. And I'm also pointed out that I serve as a chair of CACFA, the Citizens mm-hmm. Advisory Commission on Federal Areas. That's huge. That's a real big deal. I mean, we look at the parks, U.S. Parks, U.S. Forest, BLM, and all their policies, and laws and rules that they put together here locally. And many times they step over the line, step over federal law, and ILCA regulates that for Alaska. And somebody has to monitor that. So that's ongoing. I'm a part of the American Lands Coalition also, and we're that's a group of Western states that are working together to make sure that the state is the feds are treating us all fairly as far as the lands are concerned.
Okay.
So those are the issues. And, by the way, I got to tell you, Philip, I didn't know that his plan, Roger's plan was to run, nonpartisan. There's no such thing as non-affiliated. Nonpartisan.
Yep. And that's what he told me. Yeah. That's what he told me in an interview a couple of weeks ago. So about a week ago.
Interesting. Okay.
So we did get one email, and I want to make sure we get to that before,
because
we're just about out of time here. But we got an email from Carrie Sayer. It says, thanks very much to Representative Keller for helping the Susitna River Coalition get our message out in Juneau. That dam should never be built, and we appreciate his support.
Kerry, thank you. I got to tell you that when the Susitna River Coalition came down there, you guys were articulate, pleasant, happy. I mean, it was just, I was really proud to be your representative when you came down there. And of course, we'll help you. We're running out of time here.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We are just about out of time, but I wanted to make sure we got that in. Kerry is actually a volunteer here as well. So that is just about all of the time we've got for the day. You've been listening to Sioux Valley Voice. My guest today has been Representative Wes Keller. If you missed part of the show or you want to listen to it again, we'll be re-airing Sioux Valley Voice at 7 o'clock tonight, or you can listen anytime at ktna.org. The next Sioux Valley Voice will be on June 4th, and my guest will be State Senator Mike Dunleavy. I'm Philip Manning. Thanks for listening.